going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tainter Supers family. We are coming to you live straight after the Timberwolves lost 125-121 to the Portland Trailblazers. A tough game, and a game that I think reaffirmed that Minnesota are still a piece or two away from competing with these teams that are in the playoff hunt in the Western Conference. So instead of dwelling on the game, I think, you know, this game was similar to many other games this season where Minnesota just didn't have enough talent to pull it off. We are going to get into some trade stuff. The trade deadline is 11 days away, 10 days away, if you listen to this probably. And Minnesota have been pretty active from all reports, especially in the power forward market. So to discuss all the trades and the questions that you guys sent in via Twitter, it is Jack Borman, Tainter Supers contributor, friend of the show, pretty much a co-host at this stage. What's going on, Jack?
You know, I'm pretty good. I needed more beer to deal with the referees tonight, help. In the words of Shannon Sharp, help is on the way. I think with what the Timberwolves are aiming to accomplish here in the next 10 days or so. So it'll be exciting for sure, especially considering that, it'll give us some fun things to watch on the court as well as off the court, because I think that Chris Finch has the team headed in the right direction, and they've just been so much more fun to watch and so much more competitive in these two games after the All-Star break. So it just makes me more excited to write more about it and to just kind of continue watching the game or watching the team and what they're going to do, working the phones here in the next week or so.
Yeah, I managed to go the whole first minute of the podcast without mentioning the referees in tonight's game. So you're usually
like way more about that life than I am in terms of just like sandbagging the referees.
I hate them. Anyway, that's beside the point. As you said, help is on the way, or at least they'll be trying to get some help in. We've got plenty of questions that we want to try and get to. I don't know if we'll get to all of them, but before we get into the power forward stuff, which is clearly the overarching kind of point here and the overarching theme around the trade deadline for Minnesota, let's get into some of the non-power forward questions that we got. I'm just going to throw them at you straight away. This is from Wim Nasons, who is a supporter of the show, a supporter of Canis. I'm sorry if I butchered your name, Wim. But his first question, he said, Dane Moore mentioned the Spurs would be a great home for Jarrett Culver. Let's say the Spurs agree with that premise and believe he might blossom there. Anything on that team we'd like for Jarrett Culver? Would you do a future first? Would they do a future first? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I don't think the Spurs would be interested in kind of moving a future first. I've talked to Dane about this too, and I know that kind of what Dane was thinking there, I think just had to do with the fact that the Spurs have such a good development team and really enjoy guys who play hard on the defensive end. But when you look at the Spurs roster in terms of these kind of like two-way wings that they have, or just wings in general, they already have, DeMar DeRozan, who I assume that they'll try and bring back. So they have DeMar DeRozan, Rudy Gay, Trey Lyles, Devin Vassell, Lonnie Walker, Derek White, Keldon Johnson, all on their roster right now. So that's like a pretty strong stable of wings there. And the other thing too about Jarrett Culver is like his contract is not nothing moving forward. So like for Jarrett Culver, if you want to have him on your team, like beyond this year and looking at the next couple of years. So right now, Jarrett Culver is earning $6.1 million. And then next year, it becomes $6.4 million. And then if they accept a team option in 2022-23, he'd move up to $8 million. And I don't think that team option will be exercised. That's not nothing, considering that you already have like Devin Vassell is making less than that. Lonnie Walker is making less than that. Keldon Johnson's making less than that. Like, all three of those guys are far better players than Jarrett Culver is. So I just don't really see why the Spurs would be interested in making a move like that. I don't think they'd be interested if we gave Jarrett Culver for nothing, let alone giving up a first round pick for that. That's kind of where I'm at, because the Spurs don't really have like a gluttony at any position. I think they just have a really strong stable of players, at every single position except the five spot.
Yeah, it's for Culver, it makes sense what Dane said, that he would be a good fit there, because they're notorious for kind of getting the best out of players, and Pop is notorious for doing really good things with those kind of pass, dribble, shoot archetype players. But as you said, they don't need him. There's nothing that they should be willing to give up. And I guess I'll lump this next question in there with that, is that it was Free Marbury who sent this in and said, is Jarrett Culver salvageable, or will he be out of the league in 2 years? And to lump that into my answer, I think that no, he won't be out of the league, I think, in 2 years, but I also don't think he's salvageable, to be honest. And I know that might be harsh, especially on guys who are pretty high on Culver, but I just think that I can't think of one example of a player whose confidence issues hinder their game as much as Culver ever turning out to be a good player. And right now, it's very likely that he doesn't get minutes on the worst team in the league.
He should.
Especially with Jalen Noel playing really well for the last few games and playing really well in general this season, and showing that he has a skill set that works in the NBA. I just think that Culver is battling with Okogie for minutes, and Okogie still does, you know, the one thing that he does, which is play defense better than Culver plays defense, or that Culver does anything, I think. So,
yeah,
it's a tough one with Culver. I do think he will leave at the trade deadline. I don't know if you agree with that. I do think that he's someone that someone will take, because it is pretty easy to convince GMs that really high draft picks still have a chance to be salvaged. We've seen that over the years. You know, Stanley Johnson, Jahlil Okafor still on an NBA roster. These guys bounce around for a long time purely based off their draft stock from however many years ago. So I don't think Jarrett Culver will be out of the league in 2 years, but I don't think he's long for the Timberwolves, and I don't think he's really long for someone who's going to, you know, live up to their draft hype or their draft position.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that the Jarrett Culver will still be in the league, just because he gets after it on the defensive end. Yeah. And like you were saying about Okogie, like when Jarrett Culver comes back from this toe injury that he has, I mean, he doesn't do anything good enough on offense to warrant time.
Finch offense, where he clearly is prioritizing offense. Juan Hernangómez played 24 minutes tonight, and that's because spacing and being able to shoot, at least theoretically, is, you know, chief in Finch's system. He'd rather go after it offensively than get, you know, minorly better on defense.
Yeah, and the one other thing too is, like, you know, think about what Finch did with Zion Williamson last year. He was the offensive coordinator for the Pelicans, and they did a lot of these screens where they'd have Zion in the corner, and they'd kind of do a curl screen for him where Zion would then flat that, you know, he'd get a screen from somebody that was parallel with the baseline. And so then he would fly around that into the middle of the lane and curl around it and catch a pass from the opposite wing and go in for a layup. And we've seen Chris Finch try and do that for Jarrett Culver, because he knows that Jarrett Culver is a good cutter and has good hands, and, you know, is like the idea of Culver finishing around the rim is better than he actually is finishing around the rim. And even with Finch trying to throw him bones doing that, like, he still just looks like a shell of himself on offense. And it's really just, you know, sad to see, I guess, that you know, Culver, like, had an entire team on his back for his whole sophomore year at Texas Tech and took the team to the national championship in Minneapolis, of all places. And then his NBA career starts there and just hasn't gotten off the ground at all. I definitely think there's enough there in terms of you know, what he did after the trade deadline last year and kind of what he did in the preseason, the first few games of this year, where I think there's definitely would be a team that would be like, yeah, you know, we'll take Jarrett Culver for salary match and a second round pick or something like that. But I don't think the Timberwolves would get off of him in a one for one move. I think that it would be much more likely that they try and include him as like a throw in a package.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a little bit more as to like where we think some places that he could feasibly end up would be. But yeah, I mean, I personally don't think he should be in the rotation. Like, I don't think he does anything well enough offensively to warrant playing time. And if you look at strictly his defense, like, you know, I know that I'm higher on Josh Okogie than most, but Josh Okogie is still the best defensive player the Timberwolves have. He's been excellent defensively since Finch got here. And the other thing about Josh Okogie that you did not mention that I think needs to be mentioned is that Josh Okogie is a really, really good rebounder for his size.
Yeah.
And the Timberwolves really, really need more rebounders, especially because Naz Reid is not a very good rebounder, and neither is Jaden McDaniels really to this point. So they really need guys to rebound, you know, bigger than they are. And Josh does that, which is a reason why I think he's still on the floor. But, you know, man, I'm rooting for Jarrett Culver. Like, you know, it's really tough when you struggle with confidence issues. And it's not necessarily indicative of how good of a player you are, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I hope he's able to land somewhere on his feet, but I completely agree with what you said that I don't think he's long for Minnesota. And I think it's just a situation where it'd be best for him personally as a player and as a person, to get a fresh start. And it'd obviously be best for the Timberwolves too, to, you know, bring someone in who fits better with what they want to do, on the offensive end.
One place that I do like for Culver, and a player I don't actually have the trade machine up, but I think a move that makes sense for me is someone like a Ben McLemore. Another guy who's probably got more chances than he deserved in the league, but Houston are a team that would I think would be willing to take on a reclamation project. Ben McLemore has turned into a really good spot up shooter. It seems like that's the type of deal you're going to get for Culver. You're not going to get anything back of value unless you said, as you said, it's in a deal for a bigger player, and it's just a guy who you convince a team to take on. With the potential that he still theoretically has as a number six pick, just 2 years ago. So, but Ben McLemore is a guy who I've had in my head for a while now. It's just like Minnesota needs shooting. You've been beating this drum as much as anyone this season. That just because even when D'Lo's there, even when Beasley's there, they're obviously a better shooting team than they have been this season, and a better shooting team than they've been for years. But I don't think that's enough to be like, we don't need any more shooters. And a guy like Ben McLemore, who can come in and play 10, 15 minutes a game and shoot 40% from three on catch and shoot threes, is an archetype of player who I think is really valuable for this team, just because they need guys who can play at your low usage and shoot threes. And that's really not a complicated skill set, but it's something this team really craves at the moment.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either if the Timberwolves tried to go after Daniel House, Daniel House strikes me as the type of guy who, you know, contenders are probably going to come after at the trade deadline, just because I don't really think that anybody on the Rockets roster outside of Christian Wood and John Wall are really on the like, we won't trade them list. But yeah, I mean, I think they could do something like Ben McLemore and Dante Exum for like Jarrett Culver and, you know, maybe Ed Davis or something like that. I think that could be an option, but it also wouldn't surprise me if the Timberwolves wanted Ed Davis back after this season, just to be kind of like a locker room veteran leadership guy to like keep in the league and keep giving a paycheck to just be.
And
like
he's a lot more palatable when you can bring him back on a vet minimum contract rather than the $5 million he's on at the moment.
Yeah, and I just have no idea what the interest for him around the league is going to be, because, you know, I mean, he didn't really play in Utah last year, you know, and he played a decent amount in Brooklyn the year before with D'Lo. I think that something like that is going to be interesting, and I think, you know, that could also be like a spot for Rubio too, because it seems like the Rockets are kind of in rebuild mode. you know, whether they like it or not. So,
yeah,
I think they're going to be a team to watch with the Wolves for sure.
Yeah, especially with the connections, obviously, through the front office as well. You know, Gerson Rose has obviously worked there and has a good relationship, and those relationships really do matter, I think, when it comes to finding a trade partner.
And Raphael Stone was an in-house hire as well.
So
it wasn't like it's a new GM there. So
yeah, you touched on Rubio. We'll move on to him a little bit. This comes from T-Wolves Nation France. He says, "I feel that Rubio and Juancho might be more tradable than they seem to be. Which teams might have interest in them?"
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I can start this. So, you know, it was reported, you know, I kind of forget like who reported or what kind of steam it actually had, that the Raptors were somewhat interested in Ricky Rubio if they trade Kyle Lowry. I think the Raptors are going to rebuild here. Because if they trade Lowry, you know, they have Siakam and OG and Fred VanVleet, but outside, and Norman Powell too, I guess, but like outside of that, they really don't have much to work with. Like you could throw Chris Boucher in there, like that's fine, but, you know, I think they're just like in this weird gray area, and Ricky Rubio could kind of help them like stay in that, like the upper echelon of that weird gray area where they, you know, are still a fringe playoff team. And I think, you know, Nick Nurse would value having a nice veteran point guard in Rubio who would seemingly play better in a more structured offense, similar to, you know, what he played with in Phoenix and what he played with in Utah. So that's one that I think could be interesting. I would also keep an eye on Detroit too for Rubio, because it wouldn't surprise me if the Timberwolves end up having to dump Rubio somewhere, or Rubio's included as salary in a three-team trade. You know, it really would not surprise me at all if, like, you know, a team who needed, like the Sixers, for instance, will need money to help, you know, get Kyle Lowry there. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if there was, you know, a third or fourth team when Minnesota gets in there and use a team like Detroit to kind of help, you know, help add money in there. Another reason why Toronto is an interesting one is because they have Aaron Baines' salary, which is just, I think it's like, it's either 7 or 9 million, but it's non-guaranteed for next year. So the Timberwolves could waive him without any issue after the end of the season. You know, because I think the biggest reason why they'll want to trade Rubio is because they're going after John Collins. And I personally would bet that John Collins is going to be a Timberwolf 2 weeks from now. And, you know,
well, the track record is that when they go after the guys, they usually get them. And even if that's a bad thing, you know, if it's a guy who we think is probably not the right option, you know, this is the second time. I know there's the same kind of rumors have been going around with Aaron Gordon, but it seems like John Collins is firmly in the D'Angelo Russell kind of boat, where it's like Gerson Rosas has his sights locked on him. And, you know, every day we get this little bit more of a trickle of rumors and of little snippets that Rosas is going hard at Collins. And we will get to Collins because he is the most important aspect, I think, of this trade deadline. But Rubio has to be, like, if you're getting John Collins, Rubio has to be going out somewhere, whether it's a part of the three-team deal, like you said. I still think Rubio has value around the league. I think it takes, for a player of Rubio's tenure in the league and someone who has helped a lot of teams win more games than they would have without him, even if he's not doing it this season, I think it takes more than, you know, 50 games of playing pretty poorly to kind of ruin your reputation around the league. And I think you can easily get some value back for Rubio, if not including him in a deal and keep another team happy.
Yeah, and the one thing that I want to mention too about John Collins is his salary is only $4.1 million for the rest, like, total for this season. So the Timberwolves...
He's a poison pill.
What?
He's got the poison pill contract where you don't pay much for him, but you do pay for him next year.
Oh, yeah. He's a restricted, pending restricted free agent. So, you know, the Timberwolves will have to pay him whatever he's worth next season. But I don't think John Collins has the poison pill, because I don't think that applies to every player that's a pending restricted free agent. But yeah, I mean, so they could feasibly hold on to Rubio for the rest of this season and acquire Collins this season too, and still be under the luxury tax. But if they're going to get John Collins, which I think they are, Rubio absolutely has to be gone, you know, before next season starts.
It's easier to move Rubio after the season when he is an expiring free agent and you don't have to pay him for more than 1 year.
And I would wager that Rubio will be in Minnesota for the rest of the season. I think that, like we said, it's just easier to move him at the deadline, or excuse me, in the off season, kind of leading up to the draft or during the draft. I just think that big of a contract could be difficult to move, unless it was part of, you know, a three-team deal where the Wolves, you know, use Rubio as salary. But again, it's harder to use a guy as salary when he's got another year left on his deal. So I think it'll really all just depend on, you know, not necessarily what the Wolves try and do with Rubio, but with what the rest of the league is doing and who kind of needs salary. Because I mean, that salary would be pretty damn perfect to use in a Kyle Lowry trade for what Philly's got going on. Because otherwise they're going to have four guys making like $30 million a year with Harris, Lowry, Simmons, and Embiid, which would be unheard of.
You're the trade machine expert. So do you think there's something that nets Philly Lowry and nets Minnesota Collins, you know, at the same time in a three-team deal?
No, because I mean that would have to be four teams right there, because it would be the Raptors, Sixers, us, and Hawks. You're good. I think that the Collins deal would probably be a three-team deal, because my take that I'm squatting on right now is that the Timberwolves are going to trade Malik Beasley. I think that if they're going to get Collins, they're going to pretty much say, this is what we're going to sign you to at the end of this, you know, at the end of this season. And kind of let the cards play out as they will. But, you know, especially with the emergence of Ant and Jalen Noel, like if you could swing for John Collins and get Cam Reddish back or Kevin Huerter back. So like Collins and one of Reddish or Huerter for Malik Beasley. I would do that if I were the Timberwolves, and that would save you trading a first round pick to get Collins. And I think that a team with your top seven looking like, you know, D'Lo, Ant, McDaniels, Collins, Cat, Huerter, Reddish, Noel, Okogie. Like, I think that that, and then Nas, like, I think the that's a better looking 10 guys than, you know, what they would have if they tried to hold on to Beasley. Plus, they would be pushing pretty damn close to, you know, being $10 million over the luxury tax next season, if they didn't play their cards right. So that is something that I would for sure monitor. And then the second part of this question was Wancho might be more tradable than he seems to be. Like with Wancho, I really don't know. Like I could see Wancho, really the only purpose of him would be salary filler. I mean, I don't think there's any team in the league that is calling Minnesota saying, what do you want for Wancho Hernan Gomez? I think it's solely Wancho is going to be an asset that is the price of doing business for, you know, whatever salary number the Wolves are trying to get to in order to take back another player. I definitely think that Wancho would be included in any type of trade with the Hawks, just because the Hawks are still really, if they trade Collins, they're really thin up front. They have like Capella, Gallinari, and then Hunter, I guess, if you want to classify him as a four. But then outside of him, it's like they have Onyeka Okongwu, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I just want to rewind a little bit to the Beasley stuff, and I agree with you that I think it's probably an unpopular take, but it's one that I do agree with you with, is that if you can get back a shooter, be it Reddish or Huerter, Obviously, Reddish has been a little bit underwhelming, but still a really good shooter, or a decent shooter, and a really good defender as well, which shouldn't go unnoticed. I think that it's harsh because Beasley has been really good this season for Minnesota. He's averaging 20 a game, but I think in a perfect world, he isn't much more than a really good shooter, and that's probably underselling him a little bit for what he this season. Obviously, like I said, putting up that 20 a game, but he's a really good shooter, and he doesn't really do much else to help your team. He's mediocre as a driver. He can hit a mid-range shot. He's not a good defender. He's a really bad defender. And
he's lost the Timberwolves probably 3 or 4 games with just boneheaded mistakes on both ends of the floor in the last 2 minutes of the game. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like, I would sell high on Malik Beasley before. I don't know. I trust that he can continue this type of production. But I also, like, you know, I've been to probably 6 Wolves games this year or 5 Wolves games this year. And his body language stands out a lot more when you're actually in the arena and you can see things going on. But the amount of times he calls for the ball and just gets upset and his body language completely changes because he's not getting the ball. Alarming.
The next time he gets the ball, he's shooting no matter what the play is. And that's not a good trait to have.
Yeah. And I think, like, I hate to say this, but I think that, like, that could be detrimental to Anthony Edwards because, like, I love the passion that Malik plays with, and I love the energy that he brings and how he can kind of swing a game offensively just because, you know, he can make 2, 3, 4, 5 threes and just get everybody going. But I mean, when he's not hitting shots, like, he's not doing anything to help your team.
And he's
not creating for others off the dribble. He's not, you know, getting stops defensively. And he thinks he's the leader of the team. And you can't be the leader of the team when you're suspended for 12 games because of a felony gun charge. Like, I'm sorry, I don't care who you are, but you just can't be a leader on the team if you get suspended for literally a sixth of the season. Like, I'm sorry, it's just, I don't buy that. And I truthfully think that Malik Beasley's trade value, like, has not been higher than it is right now, and I don't know that it will get higher than it is right now.
What I always come back to is, what is he on a really good team? If Minnesota are really good in 2-3 years, what's Malik Beasley? And it's for sure not a 20-point per game scorer.
Joe Harris is for the Nets.
Yeah, he's kind of the prototypical guy who's scoring a lot of points on a bad team. And that doesn't mean he's not a helpful player. He is a helpful player, but he's only a helpful player on a good team if he's in that lower usage role where he's pretty much just a shooter. And he doesn't want to accept that. He's not getting paid like that. Like, he's getting paid more than what a guy who should be shooting, you know, 8, 9, 10 shots at most a game, and most of them just catch and shoot threes. So if you can get a guy who, like John Collins, for him, then this all starts to make sense, because if you have D'Lo, Cat, Collins, and Beasley on your cap sheet, things are out of control, and the identity is a weird one. If you can move Beasley, I think you do it for Collins. I think Collins next to Cat is a great pairing. I think Collins next to D'Lo is an even better pairing.
Yep.
And I think Collins next to Ant is a good pairing, because Collins is not a low usage guy, because he's averaging 20 a night for the last 3 seasons, but he's a guy who can operate in a low usage role because he will just do what is required of him. He'll shoot catch and shoot threes, he'll catch lobs, he'll roll to the rim hard, and he'll get offensive rebounds. And he does all of that at a really high level. And he's happy, he's happy, at least his game speaks to him being happier to take a backseat to a guy like Towns or Edwards or D'Lo than Beasley's is, and more conducive to winning basketball. So I think that's the kind of sticking point for me is in the Collins deal is if you can, like, how do you fit all this together? And I think the way you fit all of it together is to give them Beasley. That's the way you keep them happy. It's the way you structure this team where it actually works and the cap sheet isn't just completely stuffed for the next 5 years. I just think that as much as we both love Beasley's commitment to the game and his hustle on the court and the way he brings a fire that has been missing from Minnesota for too long, I don't think all of that is a reason to completely disregard you know, getting better in the long term. And I do think Collins makes them better than Beasley does in the long term.
Yeah, so one deal that I had in here, just to kind of play around with, is so if Minnesota traded like Wancho, Jared Vanderbilt, a second round pick, and a 2027 first round pick for Collins and Herter, with Rubio, the Timberwolves would be $13 million over the luxury tax. Without Rubio, they're about $4 million under the luxury tax, but they'd have three roster spots to fill. And that's, you know, not trading Jarrett Culver. That's not trading Malik. And if you trade Malik and you know, get those two guys back, you have a lot more flexibility to make more moves in the offseason to sign guys in free agency. Like you'd be, you know, pretty far over the salary cap, but I mean, you'd have enough space to almost, you know, I mean, you to use a sizable amount of that mid-level, or to just like take swings on guys, you know, take these Rosas type bets. I mean, the bets that Rosas has taken have been like Jordan Bell, which didn't work out, Noah Vonleh, which didn't work out. But then other than that, he's taken, you know, Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Jalen Noel, Jake Layman, which are four guys that have all worked out really well, in my opinion. And so, I don't know. I think I'm in the pro trade Malik Beasley camp at this point. Like, I think just kind of going through it with you is kind of like tip me over the edge. But I just think that you can make such a more deep, well-rounded team. And like, if your starting five was, you know, D'Lo, Ant, Josh Okogie, and then or Jake Layman, and then Collins and Cat, like that can be a playoff five, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, especially with Chris Finch as the coach, because if this team is competing with, you know, the Blazers like they are, I mean, obviously it's like a really small sample size, but I mean, the way that he has these guys playing, and this is without D'Lo and Malik, like just the style in which they're playing is so much more conducive to winning basketball. So I don't know. The Rubio and Malik situation is going to be real interesting to monitor, I think, as they get down the stretch here.
Yeah, I agree. Sticking with Rubio and Edwards for a little bit longer, this comes from Poor Talk. They say, how much of an impact, if any, do you think Edwards' recent comments about Rubio have on the chances that Rubio is traded at the deadline? Obviously, if you missed it, Ant said that Rubio was the best leader he's ever been around, and really heaped a lot of praise on him for his off-court stuff and how he's helped Ant kind of progress throughout the season. I'll say that I don't think it has much of anything to, you know, doesn't really mean that much for the front office. I think they've proven time and time again that they're pretty ruthless when it comes to trying to follow the plan, trying to follow the path that they have laid out. If they believe that Rubio isn't part of this roster in the future, which it seems fairly likely that is what they would believe if they're watching the same thing as us, then I don't think that Anthony Edwards, in his rookie season, making a comment that Rubio is a really good friend of his and that is a really helpful guy to have in the locker room, has much impact on Rubio getting traded. I just don't think that.
I mean, his comments don't have any bearing at all, because you want to know who talks to Anthony Edwards every day about stuff like this? Gerson Rosas. Like, yeah. I guarantee you, like, I mean, it's not like Gerson found out how Ant feels through, you know, Zoom comments.
Yeah.
And like, that was a huge reason why Rosas traded for Rubio in the first place. And so, I like I said, I don't think Rubio is going to get traded before the trade deadline this season. But I think it's unfortunate because, you know, Rubio's contract just keeps it, just makes it impossible to keep him around. And like, I would like to keep Ricky Rubio around in like a kind of like a Jake Layman contract where, like, you know, if he plays and plays well, great. If he doesn't play, then like that's not really a bad contract to have, like sitting on the bench that you can have for rotational minutes or have be like a matchup dependent role. So
he's getting paid too much for that. Like,
yeah, and it's like
Wancho, you can Juancho, well, you can do that, and it's still kind of hard to swallow at $7 million per. And he can be a guy who doesn't play for 10 games and then, you know, plays one or two games in a row, depending on matchups. But at $17 million, it's just not tenable. Like, that's someone you have to move.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that they can't, like, buy him out after this year and then, like, re-sign him to another contract. Like, I think it would be sweet if Timberwolves, like, bought him out after the end of this year. They were like, all right, you know, it's $17 million. We'll pay you $14. You give us back $3 million, and we'll sign you to, like, a three-year, like, $20 million deal or $21 million deal or something like that. Like, I think that would be great because then that's still, like, a really tradable contract to, like, a contender if they want, you know, an adult point guard to come and just kind of run offense for them, I guess. But like, that's not going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, it stinks because we all love Ricky as a guy, but his play just has not been up to the level that I think the Timberwolves need it to be in order to keep him around for the long haul.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back and we'll really dig deeper into the Collins stuff and Gordon and all the power forward questions that we got today. So, see you in a second.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Okay, we are back. The power forward position, it's the big one, right? Like, we've already touched on Collins. Let's dig a little bit deeper into that. We'll start with this question from Barney Stevenson. He says, with the Hawks looking a bit desperate to get rid of Collins, is it worth just waiting it out until free agency? Obviously, we'd have to dump a lot of salary, but I think teams would take Rubio or Culver for nothing. I think we touched on this a little bit, that taking Rubio or Culver for nothing is a little bit far-fetched, I think, just because teams aren't willing to, you know, take guys for nothing if they're not playing well. Rubio maybe, but Culver's a bit more of a tough pill to swallow. The problem with waiting for Collins for free agency, and the problem with waiting for anyone for free agency with Minnesota, is that the guarantee that you can sign them goes down, you know, remarkably, and even more when this guy's a restricted free agent, because if Atlanta changed their mind, then they can keep him. And historically, we know that Minnesota don't sign free agents, especially not ones of note or max deal guys. Even D'Angelo Russell, who has by all accounts seemed fairly happy with being in Minnesota and with being next to Towns, turned them down in free agency.
He wanted to be in Minnesota. He just wanted the max contract.
Yeah.
And Minnesota couldn't offer that.
Yeah, and their cap sheet is still tough to offer that, you know, because you'd have to do a little bit of working around, you know, with other guys. Obviously, yeah, the salary dumping, the Rubio, the Culver, the Beasley, all that stuff would need to happen. It just makes more sense. It always makes more sense for Minnesota when acquiring star or semi-star players to try and get them via trade. And Rosas has made, not a living, but, you know, we saw last season with Beasley, with Juancho, that getting these restricted free agents is a path that he wants to take. It gives you time to evaluate them. It gives you time to find their value and how much you want to pay them. And then it gives you the bird rights to bring them back as a restricted free agent, no matter what happens in that free agency period. So I just think that if it's me, you have to try. If Collins is the guy and you need him, you don't wait till free agency. You have to go after him in the trade and you have to figure out how you can do that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And Atlanta is going to sign and trade him. If they don't trade him at the deadline, they're going to sign and trade him. I don't want to say it's now or never, but I mean, it just doesn't make any sense for the Timberwolves to try and wait to get Collins on whatever deal he signs, because, you know, the other thing too is like when you have, when it's your own restricted free agent, you also get their bird rights. So you can go, you know, as far over the cap to sign them as you want to. But, you know, with sign and trades, there's a lot more rules that come into play that make it more difficult to match salaries and make it more difficult to pull off a trade. Like the Timberwolves, like, so for instance, like the Kevin Durant, D'Angelo Russell trade that sent D'Angelo Russell to Golden State and KD to Brooklyn was just like a complete clusterfuck. And it took a long time for that trade to get done because there's a ton of rules that, you know, go with signing trades. So, yeah, I definitely think the Wolves are going to try and trade for him at the deadline. It just doesn't really make sense financially or logistically to wait, especially since his $4 million cap hit now is so much easier to find a deal for, especially if you want to try and trade Malik Beasley too. The other thing I should note is that John Collins' trade value is a hell of a lot lower leading into restricted free agency than it is once he's actually a restricted free agent, because the Hawks have no leverage right now as it stands, because the Hawks would not be leaking that the Timberwolves are dying to have John Collins. And for anybody who like is unfamiliar with how the leaking process works, so basically teams have all of their sources or all of their kind of reporters that they're plugged in with that will, you know, leak out messages at the team's request. So for instance, Gerson Rosas is a Woj guy. Most teams are like, you're either a Woj guy or you're a Shams guy. And excuse me, the Timberwolves are Team Woj. And like, so when the Warriors and the Timberwolves started going back and forth, like the Warriors are Shams guys. So Shams was leaking shit out for the Warriors and Woj was leaking shit out for the Timberwolves as this battle to try and gain leverage. And the reason why the Timberwolves haven't leaked anything out about John Collins or the situation is because the Timberwolves probably have the upper hand in the situation, because the Hawks probably aren't getting enough legitimate phone calls about John Collins. So they leaked out, oh, the Timberwolves are dying to have him, you know, in hopes that other teams will call them to try and drive the price up so they get more out of the Timberwolves for John Collins. But I just think that, you know, the Timberwolves aren't going to bid against themselves in this situation. Like, Rosas is too smart to do that. It's just, you've got to get him before the trade deadline. Otherwise, you probably aren't going to get him at all.
What do you think Collins' value is? Like, it seems to kind of vary no matter, you know, depending on who you speak to. Obviously, Atlanta want to remain competitive and they want to use this trade to kind of springboard into a playoff push, but they also don't have leverage, like you just said. If he wants to leave, and I don't think that they would be even entertaining offers for him if they thought they could get him at the price they want him at. If they're not willing to pay him what he wants and they're not willing to budge from that number, then he's going to leave in free agency and someone's going to sign him to a deal.
And they're not going to risk actually signing him and saying, you're staying here.
Yeah.
When they know damn well that he really does not want to be in Atlanta. Because John Collins was pissed that they traded for Clint Capella, because Clint Capella is a pick and roll player or a roller. And
they minimized his role massively by trading for Capella. And Capella's been really
totally
good this
alienated
season.
Him.
Yeah, yeah. But there was always the feeling, there was always the feeling that Collins and Trey were the two they were going to build around. And Capella, on paper, I guess, made sense because he's a defensive-minded kind of guy. He works well with Trey, but the backlash from that was that Collins is a better player than him, and now he is in a third or two-and-a-half kind of role, and Collins obviously is unhappy with that. I wonder how much that factors into the money situation. Like, does he want a max from anyone, or did he just want a max from Atlanta because he didn't want to be there in general?
So he turned down, what, 4 for $85?
Yeah, $485-$490 is the rumor, you know, that goes around somewhere in that region.
Yeah, I mean, the solution to the how do you want, like, getting John Collins, how do you get John Collins to Minnesota? The solution was in 2017 to draft John Collins instead of Justin Patton. I mean, Justin Patton, like,
there's
Justin
a lot of
Patton
those, though.
Been
there's
fun
a lot,
this year,
Minnesota should have, Minnesota should have 10 championships.
Oh,
if we went
they're
through
the
all this shoulda, coulda, wouldas.
They're the all time of like guys that were taking one or two picks after them. Like, it's just so depressing to look at. But anyway, so I'm gonna steer away from that. But in terms of like Collins's value, so Collins says he wants a max. Let me tell you what, Collins isn't getting a max. I would be really shocked actually if Collins got anything north of 4 for 100. Because if you go around the league and you just look at who has the money to be able to sign him in free agency, I mean, nobody is going to be out there offering him that money. Like, you could say maybe Oklahoma City would, maybe, you know, maybe Chicago can clear money to do that. San Antonio is a team that I think could feasibly do that if they let DeMar DeRozan walk. You know, Charlotte has the means to make moves to do that, but they already have PJ Washington.
Yeah, they're not going to do
so,
it.
So everybody just says like, oh, well, you know, there's always someone out there that can do that. But it's like, when you really start looking at the math around the league, it just doesn't work. And the other thing too, is that, you know, yeah, sure, the Timberwolves are probably shit out of luck in the money category if, you know, John Collins is a restricted free agent and he's on the Hawks, versus John Collins as a restricted free agent on the Timberwolves, because then the Timberwolves run all the negotiations. The Timberwolves are going to wait until the last day, see what all the offers are, and then offer John, either let John Collins sign somewhere else and they'll match it, or the Timberwolves will say, here's our base offer, we'll wait and see, and, you know, ultimately you'll be a Timberwolf. It's just a matter of how much money you're going to get paid. And Gerson Rosas is ruthless when it comes to that. Like, he, like with Jordan McLaughlin, you saw how long that situation played out, and he let that situation drag out as long as he possibly could so that he would like get the most value on that contract. And I would be, I you know, the number that I've been using in my salary cap kind of spreadsheets that I have is 4 for 95 for Collins. I think that that's, you know, pretty fair market rate for what he brings to the table. But also, like, I mean, teams aren't going to pay John Collins $30 million a year or $27 million a year, you know, considering that, like, he hasn't proven that he can carry an offense. Like, I think that if you're getting paid that much money, you need to be able to, like, totally carry the offense or totally carry the defense. And John Collins averaged 21 a game, you know, on 58. You know, 40-80 shooting, which is awesome. And he was great last year. But again, like, they decided to go get Clint Capella and kind of alienate him. And like, I don't know. I don't think that John Collins is worth a max, or, you know, really close to a max.
So I think teams have gotten smarter in that as well. Like, it feels like that summer of Lil Deng and Timofey Mozgov.
The,
like,
summer of 4 for 72 with Evan Turner and,
yeah,
Mozgov and Luol Deng.
Like, even the Andrew Wiggins contract, like, it seems like there's just so much less of that give guys who should be good in 3 years a max deal now, because it just seems to go south for teams way too often. I think it's very unlikely that a team would come in and give John Collins $110 million or $120 million over 4 years. Like, it just seems like teams are smarter than that. Maybe that's just, you know, recency bias, and at any point anyone could make that decision. But it just seems like the chances of you getting him for under $100 million overall is fairly high. And if you can move off Beasley or you can move off Rubio or both, It does make sense to me. I know that it's not the smartest way to build a team. You're not a contender straight away. You're in, you know, you're up against the tax line pretty much a lot of the time that he's going to be here alongside Russell and Towns. But it's just, that's the Minnesota Timberwolves tax, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
that's what you have to do to be a decent team in Minnesota. And we've seen every GM that comes through here tries to avoid doing those things, and they end up 15th in the West, 14th or 12th or 10th, and it's never as good as it could be. And even when it is, it goes south like the Jimmy Butler stuff. I just think that I know that doesn't seem too aspirational from me, but I think if you can get yourself into the playoff picture with Towns, Collins, and Russell, then you can start to sign players on the fringes. Those players start to look at Minnesota as a destination rather than the Derek Jones Jr. who wrote an article about how good Minnesota's offer was to him and how friendly they were, but ultimately didn't sign there. It's, you know,
J.J. Redick did the same thing too last summer.
When you become a team who's sixth in the West or seventh in the West, those guys start to sign for you. And then you can build your team out. And I know that, you know, the word potential is a bit of a dangerous word, but I think that it is underrated how that John Collins is very young, man, and someone who was picked 19 in the draft, clearly an overachiever from his draft slot, someone who works really hard and someone who's gotten better every year outside of maybe this year where he's plateaued a little bit. But, like, I don't know. It seems like it's a little early. Like, we're sitting here talking about how much better Malik Beasley can be because he's only young. John Collins has infinitely more potential than Beasley, in my opinion. And if you
I think he's already better than Beasley.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
A lot better than Beasley.
And if you can get someone like Reddish or Herder, you know, on the fringe with him, like, that's a no-brainer for me, man. I just think that you have to try and I think Rosas thinks the same, and that's why they are targeting him, is because you have to try and get better. Even if it's not, you know, first and second in the West next year, this team isn't going anywhere right now. At this rate, Towns is gone by next season, you know, or the, you know, the free agency period.
I would slow your roll on that.
But at if they last again next season and they don't get Cade Cunningham this year or
by next season implies that it's like before next season.
Oh no, I mean
by the end of next season.
By the end of next season. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I misspoke that. But yeah, like at this rate it's all just gonna go south, even you know, more south than it is right now. And to stop that you have to show Towns, you have to show D'Lo, you have to show the world that you're trying to win games. That doesn't need to be 65 games, but if you can win 45, that is infinitely, you know, better than what it is right now.
Yeah, no, I think that we covered that pretty good. You know, I definitely think that, like, and it's not a situation where it's like the idea of Collins is better than Collins. Like, John Collins is a really, really good player.
Any Atlanta, you know, writer, beat guy, supporter, fan that you speak to are all very high on John Collins. They don't want to pay him the max either, but no one does. But they, like everyone who watches him every night will tell you that he is a very, very good player. He's not, the idea of him is certainly not better than what he is.
Yeah. And so, and that also kind of covers a question we got from Scott O'Donnell too, that said, you know, would we consider moving Beasley for the right fit at power forward? In my opinion, you move Beasley for a guy like Collins. You wouldn't move Beasley at all for like Aaron Gordon.
No. And I'm high on Aaron Gordon, but
I'm very out on Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. But there's nothing that we disagree on more than Aaron Gordon.
I know. And it's just kind of funny that like usually we see pretty eye to eye about stuff, but just like not Aaron Gordon. Let me say this. The idea of Collins, or excuse me, John Collins is a lot better than the idea of John, like the reality of John Collins is not a whole lot different from the idea of John Collins. Whereas like, I think the idea of Aaron Gordon, in my opinion, is a lot different than like what Aaron Gordon actually is.
Yeah.
And that's meant to be a compliment to John Collins, that he's like legitimately really good. And you wouldn't need to worry about like, oh, well, I think John Collins would take the next step if he went to Minnesota. Whereas like, that's what people would say about Aaron Gordon. Like John Collins has already proven, like last year, for instance, like, so just to run through, John Collins averaged 21.5 points, 10 rebounds, a block and a half, while shooting 58% from the floor, 40% from three on 3.5 attempts, and he shot 80% from the line on 4 free throws a game.
Yeah. Like,
age 22 season.
Like, that's not far from Karl-Anthony Towns' numbers. Like, we know from watching that Towns is a better player, but, like, there's very few guys who can give you 20 and 10, be a really good 3-point shooter and at least block some shots, if not, you know, be a great defender, but at least be a guy who can block a few shots here and there.
And that was with a 22% usage rate, which is pretty, which is really low usage. And so he's just like the model of how you can be really efficient in the pick and roll game and as a spot up shooter. And like, let me say this, there is not a more realistic player that the Timberwolves could acquire now or in the offseason that is a better fit offensively than John Collins, whether it be with D'Angelo Russell in the pick and roll, Karl Anthony Towns in the front court, just spacing the floor in general. And the other thing too about John Collins is like, John Collins is, I would not classify John Collins as a negative defender. Like John Collins,
he's gotten a lot better, man.
He struggled a lot, like his first kind of year or two, just because a lot of rookies do. But I mean, he's been really good when they've played aggressive, kind of at the level defense.
He's been positive on pretty much all of those metrics. Like D. LeBron is one I've been looking at lately, which is obviously Basketball Index's kind of, impact stat, the plus minus, similar to estimated plus minus and real plus minus. That's the one I've been kind of.
And Raptor too.
Yeah, and Raptor as well. He's a positive there. He's plus 0.12, which is pretty much a neutral defender. I think that he's not going to come in and solve any defensive problems. In fact, maybe they do get slightly worse, you know, without Vanderbilt there or McDaniels playing there. But the trade-off for what he does offensively is not like... He's not D'Angelo Russell, where Russell's a straight-up bad defender and a good offensive player. He's a neutral on defense and a really good offensive player.
Yeah, and I completely agree, too, that... with Collins, I mean, he's so athletic and rangy that I think if they traded for Collins, they would stop playing drop.
Yeah.
I think that they would blitz almost everything, kind of like what the Nuggets started to do with Jokic. Once they realized that Jokic just was not a good drop big, they realized that Jokic liked to show and be aggressive. And I think that's also what Cat likes to do. But in order to do that, like, you need to make sure that you have a competent guy on the back end. And like Jared Vanderbilt is sometimes that, but a lot of the times his defensive awareness like isn't great unless it's like a pick and roll and he's helping on a pick and roll, as opposed to like, you know, if Cat's showing like that's really high. Like for instance, that first play with Kanter tonight where like they blitzed D'Angelo or they blitzed Damian Lillard and they hit Kanter at the elbow and he just walked in for a layup and there was just no help anywhere on the backside. Like obviously I think that they'd be better with that if they practice that, you know, they had a whole like training camp to practice that and work on communicating and stuff like that. But that's another reason why I'm fairly high on trading for John Collins, and why I'm totally fine getting rid of, like, doing whatever it takes to get him.
Yeah. Well, I think we've covered Collins. He's the one to keep an eye on, right? Like, he's the one that I think is most realistic. The other one is Gordon, and this comes from Jake at JV Swaps. He said if Rubio's moved in a deal for a power forward, be it Collins, Gordon, etc., which other veteran or veterans would you like to see and come in to mentor the T-Pups? Is there anyone you have in mind? Do you think they need that veteran presence? Like, is it something they need to go and acquire without Rubio, or is it something that you kind of just hope that Towns and Russell and stuff can take over a little bit of that mantle?
Yeah, so something that Britt Robson brought up on Dane's podcast the last time they spoke was that there's kind of this, like, big brother, like, both Kat and D'Lo think that they're each other's big brother and that there's not, like, a defined hierarchy between the two of them. And I think that could kind of become an issue if they didn't have any other veterans. Like last year they had James Johnson, and like D'Lo and Kat both love James Johnson. And this year they have Rubio. And like, you know, I think Rubio and Russell had a really good relationship at the start of the year. And I think it's gotten worse as the season's gone on, but obviously Rubio and Kat are still super tight. And they have Ed Davis too. Like I think that D'Lo loves Ed Davis. And so as it relates to like other vet guys around the league, like I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I know like what vet guys are available. Yeah. Other than like PJ Tucker, I guess, but I know that he wants to go play for a contender. And I think that a lot of that might just have to come from within, because I don't think that you make a trade at the deadline for a guy just so he can come in and be a leader like midway through the season if he's not going to stay, you know, 2-3 years down the line. So I mean, we'll see what happens, but I don't necessarily know of any off the top of my head, but I will say that I don't think Rubio is going to get traded for a power forward. I think that that would be a different type of deal. You know, kind of like I laid out where they try and help another team make a deal. And they can get like a late first round pick out of it, or you know, a bunch of seconds or something like, or an interesting young player that they could kind of throw at the end of the bench and try and start developing. Do you have any off the top of your head, just maybe like looking through rosters or something like that?
No, not really. And it's hard, like you said, bringing them in mid-season. And then, like, these guys aren't really much of a help unless they can be there from the start of the season and they can learn the system with you. If they're coming in trying to learn the system themselves, they're not going to be that much help teaching these young guys how to learn it who have already been there for an extra 3 months. Like, I just think that they're guys you get with a vet minimum in free agency. That's the guy that, you know, you bring in within the second or third last day of free agency, and you give.
I agree, that's the place to do it.
Yeah, and because right now, if you move Rubio, you're just moving him to become better, and then and get a look at what you can be with Collins or Gordon or anyone, you know, and then you make the decision of what kind of veteran leader you need. It's not ideal. Ideally, you'd have all these vet leaders who can help your team, but I think that it's tough because you have the Ed Davis types, and you've already got one of them, obviously, in Davis. And I think the most important type is one that plays heavy minutes.
Like a Robert Covington is kind of like the perfect example, I guess, of that.
Yeah,
type of guy.
We saw Roto giving Anthony Edwards advice tonight, up two with like 3 minutes left. Like he is
he's
so
just a
awesome,
great dude.
Man. He's so awesome. Like, it's off the top of my head, that's a hard question to answer. To be honest, I just don't know what veterans you can bring in, because I think that, yeah, like I said, the ideal veteran is someone who also plays and impacts winning. And there's just not many of those that you can just go out and get. Like, and, you know, even guys like Aaron Gordon, who have been in the league for a while, like, he's not considered a leader or a veteran, someone who's going to come in and teach the young guys what to do. And either is Collins. They're more just guys who are going to inject a little bit of talent into the lineup. So, not very helpful from us, but I think it's just the answer is that it's not easy to find those
guys.
It's
just kind of the reality of the situation.
One guy I think is Larry Nance, who we should get to this last question, that question on Nance that we have.
Yeah.
I think he's a pretty good, you know, vet leader. Joe Silby, he said the same thing. He said, what's the best realistic deal for Nance? He'd be my top choice for power forward. He's got low contract. He's got the vet leadership skills.
Over Collins?
Well, that was his best realistic deal. He'd be his top choice. He said it's okay to give fewer minutes and keep developing guys like McDaniels, Nas, etc., which all makes sense, except that I think that Collins is a better player and adds more talent to your team.
I wasn't looking at the question, so I thought you were saying that Nance was your top choice.
Collins, but I think that everything Joe says is very true. Like, Larry Nance would be a really good fit on this team because he's just like the kind of perfect low usage, high energy, defensive guy, still hits threes. You can give those minutes to McDaniels and anyone else that you want to try and develop and still keep Nance there who helps you win.
I think Ant would love Larry Nance and vice versa. Like, I think those two would have just a hell of a time together. Like, so Larry Nance, if you don't know, coined the name Sexland as like the nickname of the Cavs because of like Colin Sexton in Cleveland, but also Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. That was like the nickname for their backcourt. And they've just like adopted the nickname as like Sexland for their entire team. And that was all Larry Nance is doing. but yeah, I mean, the big thing about Larry Nance is Larry Nance's contract is much lower and more palatable than any of the three, being Gordon, Collins, and Nance. When you factor in like what Collins's contract is going to be, you know, next year or in the next 3 years after that.
The thing though with Nance is that Nance, I feel like, is also harder to get, or less likely that the team want to move him.
Correct.
Like, that's what I've always thought, is that he's more palatable, his contract's less, you don't have to give up as much to get him salary-wise. But like, Cleveland don't want to part with him.
And he has a front-loaded contract. So most contracts in the NBA are back-loaded, meaning that generally what happens is the salary rises about 4.5% or 5% a year. And the reason teams do that generally is because the salary cap is expected to rise every year, so that it kind of keeps the same somewhat percentage of the salary cap moving forward. So Larry Nance's is flipped. So last year he made $12 million, and then it's $11 million this year, $10 million next year, and $9 million the year after that. So Larry Nance is locked up through 2022-2023, which is pretty damn good considering what his cap hit would be. And personally, I don't understand at all why Cleveland is like why he's in trade talks at all. I think that the Wolves would have to give up the most actually to get Larry Nance. I think they'd have to give up more to get Nance than they would for Collins.
They have no leverage with him. Like, they have leverage with Collins. Yep. Aaron Gordon seemed to be on the outer with Orlando for a while now, and definitely someone who makes sense to move. Whereas Nance just makes no sense. Like, you have to give up a lot to get him because there's no reason Cleveland need to move him.
Yeah, and so the very broad strokes of Nance is that Nance is by far the best defender of Gordon, Collins, and him out of like the three power forwards the team is, supposedly interested in. He's still a pretty good shooter from three. He hasn't quite shot as many threes this year. Obviously, just because he's been hurt and hasn't played as much. Like, his three-point rate is higher, but just in terms of total number of threes. So he's shooting 39% from three on about 3.5 attempts per game. But if you just look at the totals, I mean, he's only shot 67 threes this year. Whereas last year, he shot 159. So I would like to see a larger sample size of him making a bunch of threes before we just expect that he would be a really good 3-point shooter. In a perfect world, I think the Timberwolves would be able to trade like a very heavily protected first round pick and salary filler, like Ricky Rubio, or like Wancho, Jarrett Culver, and Jared Vanderbilt or something like that for Larry Nance. But again, like, any deal that you drum up from the Timberwolves perspective is good and well, but it just really does not make much sense for Cleveland.
He would have plenty of suitors as well. Like, any deal that someone has, 5 to 10 teams is going to beat Minnesota because they just don't have assets really. Like, we love to make these fake trades, but at the end of the day, there's not a lot that other teams want from Minnesota, and the stuff they do want, Minnesota probably don't want to give up. Like, Jaden McDaniels is the one there that it's like, there's a chance that if you want these good players, you have to give up Jaden McDaniels, because especially a guy like Nance, because that's what they're going to demand, Cleveland, because there's no reason for them to just take your scraps.
All right, so I want to get to one last question here. This comes from our good friend Jake Kelly. He's on Twitter at Jake's Graphs. You all probably know him. He's your favorite Timberwolves follows, favorite Timberwolves follow. And so he chimed in. He said, late addition, but are there any guys who wear the number 12 that would make sense for the Wolves to better promote that we have the threes deal with Arby's, where if the Timberwolves make 12 threes or more in a game, they get like free French dip sandwiches at participating Arby's locations the next day. So I was curious if you had any guys who wear number 12, like, that you were thinking about that the Timberwolves could feasibly target.
Is there any Trevion Graham or 12? I'm looking at Timberwolves 12s as well. Jacob Evans wore 12s. One of my favorite Timberwolves 12s, who I think is still bouncing around the league, I feel like I saw him on my fantasy, player list, is Gary Neal.
I think Gary Neal might play for Atlanta. So if Gary Neal plays for Atlanta, throw him in as...
I think Evan Turner wore 12 at one point. oh, man.
Like, who's a 12 around the league? Ja Morant wears 12, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Okay, I have a list of active players who wear number 12. So there's, I'm seeing here that there's 13 players who wear the number 12. So Steven Adams, LaMarcus Aldridge, DJ Augustine, Gary Clark, Daniel Gafford, Joe Harris, Tobias Harris, DeAndre Hunter, Darius Miller, Ja Morant, Kelly Oubre, my boy, BC grad, Jerome Robinson, and Grant Williams.
Well, that means that Atlanta pretty much forced to throw in DeAndre Hunter in the John Collins deal. I think that's the only way we're getting an Arby's, Arby's Kat, mania.
If we trade Kat for those two.
I'll admit something on air right now is coming from Australia. Obviously, I did live in the States for a bit, but like coming from Australia, I've never tasted Arby's. I don't know what Arby's is. I know that from the photos that I see on the Timberwolves broadcast, and those sandwiches look so good.
Oh, it's but, the it's so good. It's
but I've never tremendous. Tasted. I've never tasted Arby's. I'm sorry, Jay Kelly. He will probably never listen to this podcast again after I said that. But I think DeAndre Hunter is my guess. Is my pick there.
So if you want to best market the number 12, I definitely think the answer is Joe Harris. Because you just get Joe Harris with the headband on, with just the luscious flow he's got going, just like
him and Jake Layman
out the back. Those
the haircut between those two.
Could we make
elite.
Jake Layman and Joe Harris both wear number 12 and both play for the Wolves? I think that's the optimal solution. Would be to trade for Joe Harris, have them both wear number 12.
And if Joe Harris is on your team, you're hitting 12 threes a night.
Oh yeah, like if you had Joe Harris, Kat, and D'Lo, you're hitting 12. You could hit 12 threes in the first half.
That's sandwiches galore, baby.
Yeah, and then if you're looking at like most realistic one, I think maybe like Gary Clark. Like you could,
yeah.
That's probably someone you could have for pennies, or Jerome Robinson. You could probably get for pennies. Like Jerome Robinson can shoot. He's a really good shooter at BC. I still like don't know how he was drafted before Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was, he's almost like out of the league now. But he can shoot. I mean, I guess that's like what you're looking for in any guys you're picking up. But I definitely am all aboard the Joe Harris, Jake Layman dynamic duo train to just get you Arby's every single night.
Yeah, that's a nice way to end it, I think. A nice, lighthearted, you know, it's made me hungry too. I'm going to go make myself a sandwich as soon as we finish here because now I'm hungry.
Yeah, no, I definitely think, though, that in the next, you know, 10 days, 9 days, 11 days, whatever it is when you're listening to this, you know, that the Timberwolves are going to look different. And
yeah,
I think that ultimately they're going to get better. And they're going to be more fun. Like I honestly do think that John Collins is going to be a Timberwolf, and I'm not saying that just to like drink the Kool-Aid. you know, I'm saying that just because I don't think the Timberwolves are really going to have a ton of competition. Just because I don't think a ton of teams have the cap space to try and get a guy like Collins when everybody's saving up for next year. So hopefully the next time we talk, you know, it'll be a John Collins trade reaction podcast that we can get ripping out here at some point, you know, in the next 2 weeks. But yeah, definitely going to be a fun next few weeks here with the trade deadline, and then hopefully Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell making their way back shortly thereafter. So
yeah, it's definitely, things are looking up. Even the losses like tonight's game is definitely looking like more fun. I had fun watching them tonight, apart from the referees. Sorry, I wasn't meant to bring that up again, but I do think that this team is looking fun, and you can see the potential is there, and I think Finch is doing a good job. And we didn't even discuss anything to do with the fact that they still could get a top three pick, and that would change everything, I think, as well. So, as you said, hopefully next time we're talking about trades and we're talking about more wins like the Pelicans game a few nights ago. And I guess I'll catch you next time when that does happen, Jack.
Yeah, that sounds great. And I'll have more on the trade deadline stuff. I haven't quite decided yet. No, I've got for sure one more part coming that'll probably drop Monday for people in the United States that are listening to this. It'll probably drop Monday morning. But and then I might have another part that drops later in the week. I haven't quite decided what I want the timing for it to be or how exactly it's going to shake out. But yeah, I'll have two more pieces probably coming on the trade deadline before we get there. So keep an eye out for that.
Definitely. Tune into Canis, Jack. If you don't know by now, if you're listening to this and you don't know what Jack does, I don't know what is wrong with you, but Jack does awesome work at Canis, and the trade deadline stuff is always really good. He is the resident expert on trades, and definitely keep your eyes peeled there. And I'll see all you guys next week. And Jack, thanks again for coming on. Always a pleasure, man.
Absolutely, man. Good to be with you.